ओम हरि ओम तत्सत श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः हरि ओम ओम गणानां त्वा गणपतिं हवामहे कविं कवेनाम पमश्रवस्तमम् देवाय तस्मै नमः ओम श्री परमात्मने नमः टुडे हैपेंस टू बी द फर्स्ट डे द फर्स्ट सेशन वांटेड टू इनवोक द ग्रेस ऑफ भगवान ऑफ ऑल द मूर्तिस हियर इन द टेंपल वेरी फॉर्चुनेट टू हैव प्रोग्राम हियर And thank you, Ashoda, for having arranged this. And also, Suhasima, Raju, Sachin, these people who really made efforts to make it happen. Bhagavad Gita is one of the prasthana trayam. Trayam means a set of three. The prasthana trayam means the texts which serve as means of knowledge. Threefold scriptural literature we have. The source text is the Shrutihi Veda itself. So Upanishads, which form part of the Veda, the end portion of the Veda, called Vedanta Shastram, is the Shruti Prasthanam. And the Bhagavad Gita happens to be the part of Mahabharatam, the epic. It's called Smriti Prasthanam. We also have Brahma Sutras, the analytical study of the Veda Mantras, the Vedanta Mantras, Upanishad Mantras. It's called Nyaya Prasthanam. So of these three, we have taken up here Bhagavad Gita. So Bhagavad Gita is a means of knowledge of the truth. So the very sentence when I say it's a means of knowledge of the truth, we're studying Bhagavad Gita because Bhagavad Gita will help us understand what the truth is, what the reality is. So the means of knowledge in Sanskritam is called Pramanam. Pramanam means a means of knowledge. Your seeing power in your eyes is a Pramanam. Is a means of knowledge, instrument of knowledge, to have knowledge of the object called light. Your hearing power is a means of knowledge of the sound. So every sense organ serves as a means of knowledge of its own corresponding object. Your power of taste, your tongue, serves as a means of knowledge of the object called taste. Similarly, to know the truth, you need a means of knowledge, and Bhagavad Gita serves as a means of knowledge. So Pramanam, so Pramana Granthaha. If you ask why we should know the truth, so to know the truth, Bhagavad Gita is a means of knowledge. Why we should know the truth? If we ask, what is that one thing which is always sought after by all the people of all places, in all times, always, universally, what is that which is searched what is it sought after? Through all one's ends, through all the accomplishments, we ask, nobody will deny here, it is happiness. And happiness means being happy always, being happy everywhere, being happy with everybody is happiness. If you understand this is what happiness is, and we can understand, really we do not have happiness. In spite of saying, I am happy, you are happy, we are happy, really there is no happiness. We do express, we do say, in our day-to-day conversations, I am very happy, I am very happy, I am very, very happy. We do say this. But do we really have happiness? If you are always happy, if you are everywhere happy, with everybody you are happy, there is no time, no place, with no people who you are not unhappy at all. Then you can say there is happiness on your part. In fact, we do not even know what happiness is. Without knowing what happiness is, we are simply saying that we are happy sometimes. When you're unhappy, you don't say, I'm very unhappy. We do. Softly we say, but when you're happy, we say, I'm very happy. But really, we do not even know what happiness is. And we do not even know that we do not know what happiness is. And we do not know at all that we need to discover what happiness is. Anyway, it is very well known fact that happiness is an ultimate choiceless end. Because there is no choice. We have choice over many things. We can choose. In eating we have choice. In drinking we have choice. In choosing a place to live, we have choice. You want to study, again your choice. You can choose to study this subject matter, that subject matter, physics or chemistry or something else. You can choose to study in different universities. Your choice. Even the dress, you can choose to wear the type of dress you want to wear. Your choice in everything. But do you want to be happy or unhappy, if I ask? Do you have choice? No choice. Yeah, I can choose to be unhappy also. Can we say that? No. We cannot say, which means we do not have choice. Which means we want happiness, we want to be only happy. That is why happiness is a choiceless end. And here, happiness is something which we need not attain, we cannot attain. Why? Because it is already there, always there. In fact, happiness alone is everywhere, always, in every form, everywhere. If that is so, then why there is unhappiness? Why there is sorrow? Why there is grief? If there is happiness always everywhere with everybody in everything, why there is unhappiness? Why there is sorrow? Why there is grief? The fact is, we do not know what happiness is. You are not knowing what happiness is. Ignorance of happiness is the cause of unhappiness. Therefore, happiness cannot be, need not be attained, which means happiness is but still it is not there. So not knowing what happiness is as good as not having happiness. It means happiness is covered by ignorance of what it is. Ignorance covers. Covers means it prevents you from seeing. Anything covered is prevented from being seen. So happiness also is covered by what? What is it which covers? Ignorance. Therefore, knowing is discovering, and discovering what is, what happiness is attaining happiness. Now the question comes, happiness is something to be discovered. How to discover happiness? Happiness is not a form, not a sound, not a smell, taste, a touch, not an object. Happiness is the very swarupam, the nature of the reality. Which means happiness and reality cannot be separated. And this is where we are exposed to our ignorance, that we do not know what the reality is. If we know what the reality is, we would have definitely known what happiness is. Reality and happiness are not two different things. Only by knowing what the reality is, we can understand what happiness is. It's like saying, if you know what the sun is, then you will definitely know what light is, what brilliance is. Can you ever separate the sun, Suryaha, and its Prakashaha, its light? Sun and light are inseparable. Have you ever asked the question, why sun is so bright and why sun is brilliant? We never ask. Being bright, being brilliant is the nature of the sun. There is no dark sun. Sun means light, light means sun. Inseparable. So illumining is the nature of the sun. Being hot is the nature of the fire. What is heat? Can you separate the heat from the fire? No. Fire, heat and the fire are inseparable. And what is this heat? We talk about the heat all the time. Heat is inseparable, intrinsic property of the fire. Similarly here, happiness and the reality are inseparable. Happiness is, in fact, another word for fullness. Another word for limitlessness. Inseparable from the reality. If you know what the fire is, definitely you know what heat is. Similarly, if you know what the reality is, you will know what fullness is, then what happiness is. Therefore, now we understand the importance, the value of, the necessity of knowing the very reality or the truth itself. You need not do anything to know what happiness is. If you know the reality is enough, knowing the reality itself is knowing what happiness is, what fullness is. The next question comes, how can I know what the reality is? You wouldn't have been interested in knowing the truth. Nobody will be interested in knowing the truth. We'll all discover desire for knowledge of the truth only when we know the value of the knowledge. Knowledge of the truth is knowledge of what happiness is. And knowing what happiness is, being free from unhappiness. Freedom from unhappiness. Therefore, what is the truth? What is the reality? This is where we know why we should know the truth. Why we should know the truth. The truth, I mean the reality. Again, what is the reality? What is the truth you are talking about? There is a truthfulness in speech as a discipline. But here, the truth, I mean the ultimate truth, the absolute reality. See, the one thing without which the universe cannot exist at all. Imagine if I take the wood, only wood from this whole building. What will happen? The wood is removed from this construction. This construction will collapse. This will not stand. If we remove water from the ocean, all the water will pump and take away. Will there be ocean after removing the water? Ocean will disappear. So, with reference to the ocean full of waves, water is the reality, the truth. So that which lends existence to the ocean, that which alone is in the form of the ocean, that without which the ocean cannot exist at all, the word ocean will become meaningless. The word ocean will be meaningless word. Similarly, there is one thing, one truth, which alone is in the form of this universe, without which this universe cannot exist at all, without which the word universe will be meaningless, is the ultimate truth, absolute reality. With reference to this entire cosmos, in fact, we use the term cosmos, universe, world, etc. We have no idea exactly where the space begins, when the time begins. And within the realm of this time and space, there are innumerable countless forms, names and functions which constitute the whole. And in that universe, every one of us is here as part of the universe. within the ocean, every wave is there as a part of the ocean. So all the beings are here. And in this inexplicably vast universe, the cosmos, there is a truth which alone is in the home of everything, reality. And that is the absolute reality, the ultimate truth, in Sanskritam, implied by the term Param Brahma or Atma. These words do not indicate the reality. These words are used to imply the reality. That is reality. So we do not know there is reality which alone is in the form of everything. And we do not know what that reality is. And now we know the value of the knowledge of the reality. Why? Because knowing the reality is knowing what fullness is, what happiness is. That is why the word mokshaha, which means freedom, muktihi mokshaha vimochanam mukuhu, so many words are there. Freedom from unhappiness means happiness. So moksha sadhanam, the means of attainment of freedom from unhappiness, is discovering what happiness is, and discovering what happiness is discovering what the reality is. Again, reality alone is in the form of everything, even though we do not know what the reality is. And reality also cannot be attained, need not be attained. Reality is also all the time there, everywhere there. Reality alone is in the form of everything also. And this, how to discover this reality? Isn't it? Now we have to know the reality. That's why knowledge of the truth itself is knowledge of what happiness is. There are two different things, isn't it? Knowing the truth is knowing what happiness is, knowing what fullness is. Simultaneous. So knowledge itself is moksha. We say knowledge is the means of attainment of moksha, but still jnanam sadhanam mokshaha sadhyam, we say, but still knowledge itself is freedom. Therefore, the freedom has to be, which is knowledge itself is happiness. Therefore, now knowledge becomes the end. Knowledge is the end, goal for us. Why? Moksha is our choiceless end. Happiness is our choiceless end. Our knowledge is choiceless end. Knowledge of the truth is the choiceless end. And to discover this truth, attain knowledge of the truth, you need a means of knowledge. Without a means of knowledge, no knowledge is possible. You want to know anything in the world, even the objects of knowledge. You want to know anything in the world, you need a means of knowledge. In the very beginning I said, you need your, keep your eyes open. It must be distortion free vision you must have. Then only you can have the knowledge of the truth, the knowledge of the light. To have the knowledge of the sound, you need your ears, hearing power as a means of knowledge. Keep your eyes closed, ears closed, you can't say there is sound or there is no sound. You have to make use of your hearing power, your ears, to have the knowledge of sound. To have the knowledge of smell, you have to use your power of smelling in your nostrils. which means to have the knowledge of anything, you need its corresponding means of knowledge, instrument of knowledge. So here, to have the knowledge of the truth, also you need a means of knowledge. And here, that means of knowledge of the truth is Vedanta Shastram, otherwise called Jnana Kandaha of the Veda, otherwise called Upanishadaha, Upanishad. All the three words mean the same. Upanishad, Vedanta Shastram, or Jnana Kandaha mean the same of the Veda. Here again, one more fact you need to understand here. The truth of the universe is there everywhere. But it is not available for recognition through your sense organs. It's not known through sense organs. It's not available for perception through senses. Because truth is not an object. Even though truth alone is in the form of everything, truth alone is there as everything, truth, the reality happens to be the most abstract, subtlest. It is not available for objectification. It is not an object, not available for sense perception. And again, the Shastram, the scripture alone helps us understand this fact. The truth, the reality has to be discovered, is available for recognition only in one's own mind, as a truth of one's own self, as a truth of I. The wave has to discover the truth of the ocean. The wave need not travel, go for pilgrimage all over the ocean. The wave has to see the truth of the ocean, the water, the H2O being available as its own truth. Because every wave is truth, the water. Similarly, yourself, everyone, every individual being, being part of the whole, the truth of the whole is available for recognition in one's own mind. This fact also is revealed by the Shastra. Truth has to be, in fact, discovered only in one's own mind, as the truth of one's own self. And here again, I'm giving such a very, very, very preliminary introduction to the Shastra class, because I see a lot of many new faces. But once I take up 7th chapter, it will be different class. Because for you to join other people who have been studying for quite some time, I am giving this very basic introduction. And this is where we are exposed to another ignorance, our own ignorance. Oh, truth of the whole is available for recognition as truth of one's own self in one's own mind, means you come to know that you do not know your own truth, your own self, your own swarupam. How do you refer to yourself? When you refer to somebody else, other person has come, he has come, she has come, it's there, that's there. Use all the pronouns to refer to other people. We can say she or he or she, it, that. Use all pronouns to refer to other people. But to refer to yourself, what is that pronoun you are using? You use the pronoun I, the first person singular pronoun I. I come, I go, I sit, I eat, I want, I do. All the time use this pronoun I, first person singular pronoun I. And here, if we ask the question, do you know you are? Do you know you are? You will all definitely say, yes, I know I am. You not say, if we ask you the question, do you know you are? You say what? Yes, I know I am. Who will say, I doubt? I do not know. Put up your hands. I think I don't know whether I am. Nobody will say. If you say, whoever says, we'll refer to Suhasniyamma. We have already a psychiatrist sitting in our class. Nobody will say, you all know you are, which means there is knowledge that you are. You know you are. I know I am. And every one of you can say, I know I am.
It's a very partial knowledge.
I know I am. A very important knowledge. And it is this knowledge which distinguishes you from all the living beings, all the creatures. No other being in the world is blessed with this unique, special knowledge of existence of one's own self in terms of I am. I am. No other being knows, no dog knows I'm a dog, no monkey knows I'm a monkey, no lion knows I'm a lion, no elephant knows I'm an elephant. No other creature in the world is blessed with this knowledge of existence of oneself in terms of I am. But even here, we human being is unique, exalted, sophisticated being because of this knowledge. This knowledge makes human being a self-conscious being. You're a self-conscious being. You know you are. But there is also ignorance. You know you are, but you do not know what you are. There is half knowledge and half ignorance. It's like saying wave is, means you have the knowledge of existence of the wave. Oh, wave exists. But what is this wave which exists? Wave is, if you know wave is, it is half knowledge. If you know wave is water, it is complete knowledge, total knowledge. Wave is means you have the knowledge of the existence of the wave, but you do not know what wave is. If you know wave is water, it is complete total knowledge. Similarly, you know you are, but you do not know what you are. There is half knowledge and half ignorance. And you do not know that you do not know what you are. If you already know what you are, you would have known what the reality of the whole universe is. If you knew already what the reality is, and you would have known already what fullness is, then you would have already known what happiness is. Then you would have been reveling in happiness only always. Then there wouldn't have been any unhappiness at all. Therefore, now the question is, you need to know what you are. Knowing what I am is knowing what the reality of the universe is, what this entire universe is essentially. And knowing what this entire universe is essentially, knowing what the truth of the universe is in fact knowing, understanding even what Bhagavan is, who God is. In fact, knowing what Bhagavan is, in fact knowing what happiness is, what fullness is. And this knowledge of the truth is as knowledge of one's own self is said to be Atma Jnanam, Brahma Jnanam, or Bhagavat Sakshatkaraha, which is knowledge of happiness, knowledge of fullness. Now, the next step is, if knowledge has to be discovered as only as the truth of one's own self, as the truth of I, I cannot use any of this means of knowledge, let's say instruments of knowledge, the sense organs. If what has to be known is any form, an object, which is different from me, and who has to know the truth? You are the one who has to discover the truth. You are the one who you have to discover, you have to know. Therefore, you are the knower. You are the knower, because you are the one who has to know. And if what is to be known by you is any form, an object obtaining in any form, the form, color, or light, or a sound, or a smell, or taste, or touch, then definitely you can use your instruments of knowledge, the five sense organs, as means of knowledge. See, what is to be known is different from you, the knower. Then you can use your sense organs as means of knowledge. But what is to be known here is yourself. The truth of I. What this I is. All the time I use the expression I to refer to myself. What this I is. I know I am, but what I am, what I is. So what is to be known is also I, my own real nature, and I am the knower. So the very subject, the knower, itself happens to be the object of knowledge. I am the knower, I am the one to be known. Then no other means of knowledge can be used here. All the instruments knowledge you have cannot be used as means of knowledge. Therefore you need a very special means of knowledge, which is the Shastram. And here we can say, your own eyes. Take for example, you use your eyes to see everything in the world. All the colors you see, all the forms, all the shapes, all the light, everything you see with your eyes. And these eyes have to see themselves sometimes. Something, some itching comes, some irritation is there. And you want to know what is there in the eyes. You want to see your eyes. The eyes see everything. And for the eyes have to see themselves. Then you have helplessly, choicelessly, you need a reflecting mirror. Medium, a mirror. And you keep the mirror. And even when the mirror is used, the reflection of the eyes can be seen. But even to see the reflection of the eyes, who can see? Eyes alone are the seer. Isn't it? Eyes are the seer. Eyes see everything in the world. Your eyes see everything in the world. And eyes themselves have to see themselves. Their own reflection. Eyes can never see the original eyes. Eyes can only see the reflection. Themselves. Huh? And eyes need, the eyes need definitely a mirror, reflecting mirror, which reflect the eyes. Similarly, you are the knower, and you are the knower of everything in the world. And to know what you are, you need another reflecting mirror. Which means, not the physical mirror here, you need a means of knowledge, which we say, we have this Shastram, the scripture here. Shastram, the scripture, the words of which, when unfolded carefully, definitely reveal, reflect your real nature. Understand what you are. Therefore, this Shastram serves as a valid means of knowledge of the truth obtaining as one's own self. Now, you understand the importance of the Shastram, how Shastram serves as a means of knowledge. Is it clear? And here I said, Upanishad is the textbook which is there at the end portion of the Veda called Veda Anta Shastram or Jnana Kanda. And here Bhagavad Gita also gives the essence of the Upanishads. There is a verse in the Dhyana Shloka, a Dhyana Shloka, which talks about the glory of Bhagavad Gita. Sarva Upanishadaha Gavaha Dogdha Gopala Nandanaha Parthaha Vatsaha Sudhihi Bhokta Gita Amritam Mahat Dugdham Gita Amritam Mahat. The milk, all the Upanishads are likened to cows, and Bhagavad Gita is the milk, milk from the cows of Upanishads. Which means, what benefit, what the result, the fruit you want to enjoy by studying the Upanishads, the same fruit, same benefit you can have by studying the Bhagavad Gita. Because Bhagavad Gita is in no way distorts or different from the Upanishadic teaching. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita also is a means of knowledge of the truth. It's a pramanam, it's authentic. It's a pramanam, it's a means of knowledge. The Bhagavad Gita here is a pramana grantaha. It's also called moksha shastram. I can say one more thing here. So the reality is implied by the term Brahman, and Bhagavad Gita serves as a means of knowledge of the truth implied by the word Brahman. Bhagavad Gita book itself is called Brahma Vidya, knowledge of the truth. And not only that, and to have the knowledge of the truth, one must be eligible, qualified. If any knowledge needs a prerequisite qualification, you cannot have a doctorate without having a master's degree. So here also, even to have knowledge of the your own self, knowledge of the truth, you must be qualified. And the qualification required for this knowledge is what? Antakarna Shuddhi, Antakarna Naishchalyam. In fact, Shastram itself says it's very easy to attain moksha, discover moksha. It's very, very easy to attain knowledge of the truth. What is difficult is, because truth is all the time available, you can discover it easily. What is that instrument of knowledge? Antahkaranam, the instrument of knowledge. Where knowledge has to rise, that instrument, it must be qualified, prepared, ready. So relatively, mind must be pure and steady. And for which one has to live a way of life prescribed in the Shastra. So Bhagavad Gita teaches this is the way of life one has to live. Otherwise called Karma Yoga. And the values, the way of life one has to live in order to become qualified for this knowledge. Bhagavad Gita also teaches the way of life. Not only Bhagavad Gita reveals the truth, what the truth is, it also teaches the way of life which has to be followed in order to prepare the mind for this knowledge. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita is also called Yoga Shastram. So, Yoga Shastram, why Bhagavad Gita is called Yoga Shastram? Why it is called Brahma Vidya? You don't know. Okay. And this is Bhagavad Gita, and we decided to do the 7th chapter this time. Okay. Again, in the Upanishads, we have many Mahavakyams. Mahavakyam means a statement which reveals the identity between the individual microcosmic being and the total, the macrocosmic being. We look at the whole Jagat as Ishvara, the Lord, and you are an individual, the Jiva. So just as the wave and the ocean are different from the standpoint of the form and name, but still they are essentially one from the standpoint of the water. They are not different. Because here, the standpoint of the Nama Rupa, definitely you are different from the rest of the whole cosmos. The universe, you are different from the Lord. Lord is different from you. You are different from the whole. the universe is different from you, the standpoint of the form and name. But essentially, there is no difference. So the statements which reveal the non-difference between, essential non-difference between the individual and the total, is called Mahavakyam. And one such popular Mahavakyam is Tattvam Asi. And there, the Tvam is a second person singular pronoun, which means you. And the Tat is a third person singular pronoun, which means that, which stands for the whole, the Lord, Ishvara. So Tattvam Asi means are. So you are that truth, that reality. You are the truth of the whole, and you are the Lord. Essentially, you are the truth, the Lord. You are already what you are searching for. You are already. So this is a Mahavakyam. And here, this knowledge will be complete and thorough only when you have, you analyze everything properly here. So there must be analysis of the individual, what an individual is, what an individual being is, and which will help you arrive at what an individual is essentially. It's like asking, what is wave is? Is just the form or something more than this? You say, yes, wave is a small form and which is reducible to the H2O, the water. Similarly here, what an individual is? Called individual analysis. It's called Tvampada Vicharaha. Enquiry into the essential nature of the individual. And what this whole cosmos is, all these innumerable countless forms, names and functions which constitute the whole universe, what this entire universe is essentially, this is Samashti Vicharaha, enquiry into the essential nature of the total. It's called Tatpada Vicharaha. And when you analyze, you arrive at the essential oneness of Tvam and Tat. Understanding how essentially you and the whole are one. So the word Asi, Asipada Vicharaha, means the word analysis of the meaning of the word Asi, is actually understanding the oneness of the truth of the individual and the total, revealed by the word Asi. And here Bhagavad Gita consists of 18 chapters. And the first 6 chapters are divided into 3 parts as Prathama Bhagaha, Madhyama Bhagaha and Charma Bhagaha are the third part. And the first 6 chapters discuss, in fact, help us understand the truth of the individual, the Tvampada Lakshyartha Bodhaka Bhagaha. So the first 6 chapters help us understand how an individual is essentially the truth. Second 6 chapters help us understand how the entire universe is, the total is, or Ishvaraha, the Lord, is essentially the truth. Second 6 chapters. So you will understand even the Lord, Bhagavan. Lord, God, Bhagavan is a fact, a concept to be understood. The second 6 chapters, the Madhyama Bhagaha, will help us understand even Bhagavan. What Bhagavan is, Bhagavan's form and Rupam and Swarupam. Both will understand. What is Bhagavan's Rupam and what is Bhagavan's Swarupam? Understand? When you understand this second set of six chapters, and the last six chapters, therefore, Tatpada Vicharaha, Tatpada Lakshyataha, what is the meaning of the word Tat, understood in, discussed in the second six set of six chapters, the last set of six chapters, the Charma Bhagaha, the concluding end portion, the six chapters, discuss the meaning of the word Asi, which means the revealed essential oneness of Tvam and Tat. By the time you complete the 18th chapters, we are supposed to have thorough, doubt-free, clear, ascertained vision of the oneness of the truth revealed by Tattvamasi Mahavakyam. So one statement, Mahavakyam, is elaborately discussed, help to understand the Mahavakyam content in these 18 chapters. And not only that, how to live my life, what is the role of values, how values have to be understood and lived, and how I can prepare my mind for this knowledge, that way of life also is discussed here, Bhagavad Gita. And this is what Bhagavad Gita is, and we're going to study Bhagavad Gita. Is it clear? And in the very first part, the first six chapters, as I told you already, Tvam Pada Vicharaha means the analysis of the individual is not done directly there. But what is an individual? What individual is essentially? Is revealed, discussed. The Tvam Pada Lakshyartha, what is the implied meaning of the word Tvam, is really discussed in the first six chapters. Not directly, but there's a way how it is revealed. Therefore, we can say Jivatma Swarupam, the essential nature of the individual, is subject matter discussed in the first six chapters. Then every individual definitely has to make appropriate, adequate efforts to achieve anything in this life. And even for this jnanam, even for accomplishing moksha, one has to make one's efforts. Because everything is already predetermined, predestined, vidhi. So everything is predetermined and predestined means I do not have any say over anything. So let me not make any efforts at all. Let me sit quietly. As things come, let me take them. What is the use of making efforts? Anyway, things are going to happen the way they are destined to be. If we think and we put the blame on vidhi, we do not make any efforts at all, we will become fatalistic people, isn't it? So definitely that problem should not occur here. We should not put the blame on everything on fate. Therefore, here Bhagavad Gita definitely makes it very clear that we have to make our own initiative. We have to make our efforts. Therefore, it's called prayatnaha. How important it is to make our efforts. adequate, appropriate efforts. That is also emphasized in the first six chapters. Then the way of life. What is that means I need to prepare my mind for knowledge? That is living a life of karma yoga. So what is karma yoga is also discussed in the first six chapters. The three important things we need to understand discussed in the first six chapters is Swarupam, the essential nature of the individual, Jivatma Swarupam. Then the efforts one has to make, Prayatnaha. Then the way of life one has to live to prepare one's mind for knowledge, called Karma Yoga. So Jivatma Swarupam, Prayatnaha, Karma Yoga are the three important main topics discussed in the first six chapters. Now, seventh chapter onwards, until the 12th chapter, six chapters form the Madhyama Bhagaha, the middle part of Bhagavad Gita, wherein Ishwaraha, the Lord, the whole, the total, the macrocosmic being is subject matter. You can say Ishwara Swarupa, Ishwara Swarupam, Ishwara Rupam. We need to understand even Ishwara's Rupam, isn't it? What is Bhagavan here? Then Ishwara Swarupam is discussed. Then if when we make our efforts and when we live a life of karma yoga, which is expected on our part, and there is what is expected on the part, what we can expect on the part of Ishwara, that is anugraha, grace, isn't it? Ishwara anugraha, Ishwara krupa. That is also discussed. So in the first six chapters, if prayatnaha, effort on the part of the individual is discussed, and the grace is anugraha, daiva anugraha, daivanugraha, isn't it? Grace of Ishwara is also how we can tap how Bhagavan's grace is there. What is Bhagavan's grace? That's also they discussed in the second six chapters. And then, when you understand the concept of God, the Lord, how meditation is called upasanam. So what is meditation? What is the limitation of meditation? Meditation as a discipline, emphasis here, as a discipline practiced for mental steadiness. So upasanam. These are the three topics discussed in the second six chapters. Ishwara Swarupam, the essential nature of Bhagavan, the whole. Then Ishwara Anugraha, grace of Bhagavan. What is grace? Grace of the Lord. Then Upasanam, meditation. So Karma Yoga is a discipline practiced for mental purity. Meditation is a discipline prescribed for mental steadiness. By the time we complete this, will also understand very clearly. When you understand the concept of God, you will understand definitely efficacy of prayer, significance of worship, the value of values. Everything will be very clear. Okay? And these three topics, which form subject matter of the next six chapters, we can see in the very seventh chapter. We are supposed to understand Ishvara Swarupam, then Upasana, the meditation upon the Lord in a given form, and also Ishvara Anugraha, grace of Bhagavan. Okay, so we'll continue. You have 5 minutes break.